Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. In the past few years, we've been learning a lot about the dangers of early specialization for young athletes, injury and burnout. This hour, I'm going to talk with two incredible athletes who specialized late, at a point when most athletes have passed their peak. Later this hour, Kitty Weston-Naur. She's better known as Miss Kitty. She's 69 years old and still competing in the BMX Bike World Championships. But first, ultra cyclist Sarah Cooper, who lives in Urbandale, turned in a remarkable performance in the Race Across America. She rode her bike 3,070.28 miles in 11 days, 18 hours and 56 minutes. She is here with me now. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for having me on the program.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And when did you first become interested in long-distance cycling?
Oh, a few years back. I started out in triathlon, and after doing a number of races, I was just looking for something different to try, and I stumbled across a few events on Google and thought I'd give them a try, and did rather well at it and just progressed from there.
So when you did rather well at it, I mean, that's an enjoyable experience, but can you remember the moment where you thought, you know what, I'm going to really give this my all?
I think probably after my first Devil's Entry, I went to Death Valley late in 2013 and did my very first Devil's Entry, and I just had a blast. It was so much fun, and I ended up finishing first overall in front of the men and the women that day, and from there decided to tackle bigger and longer events, and I really enjoy being on the bike, even for long periods of time, so it's been both fun and rewarding.
Were you an athlete as a kid?
Oh, no. I tried out for the track team when I was in eighth grade, and the coach literally laughed at me and told me to go home.
Oh.
So bad. So I was really interested in horses, and I rode horses for most of my youth. And then when I was in college, I picked up running just for fitness, and I was a fitness runner. I think my first marathon in 1999 I finished in well over 5 hours, so definitely not competitive from that aspect.
Although still an impressive feat, I'm not going to dismiss that. So, how old are you now?
I'm 45.
Okay, you're 45 years old. You have four kids. How old are your kids?
My oldest is 16. I have 14-year-old twins, and then my youngest is 12. I have three girls and one boy.
And for the past few years, you've been focusing on the kids and staying at home, right?
Yes, I've been home for about 10 years since we moved to Des Moines.
When did this interest in cycling come about? Put it on that timeline for me.
We moved here in 2006, and I picked up triathlon in 2008. And then I was a triathlete for a number of years, and switched over to ultra cycling full time, as in giving up running and swimming in 2014. So it's been, it's been a good 3-year process to get to RAM.
What made you turn from being a fitness runner to really wanting to push yourself?
Probably time and opportunity. When I first started out with just fitness activities, I was working for one. I had young children. And then it really wasn't until my late 30s when, my kids became a little bit more independent that I really had time and energy to focus on a sport and consider self-improvement as a worthy goal. Before it was just, okay, let's try not to get fat. Now now it's, let's see if I can run faster, bike faster, swim better. And so it just went from there. And then, as I got better at it, it made more sense to see, okay, well, what have I got? What can I do with this?
Was there a moment when you realized that you might be very good at this? Because you had done a lot of athletic events. You were strong. You were fit. But you have described yourself as kind of a middle of the packer. Was there a moment where you thought, oh, wow, I actually excel? Or could excel at this?
Probably at my first 24-hour race. After I did that double century, I took about, I think I took 6 weeks and prepared for a 24-hour race. And I showed up on 6 weeks of indoor preparation on riding, essentially riding on a trainer in the corner of my basement, and was the first woman overall and set a new course record by quite a bit. So I was like, okay, I think maybe I've found my thing.
And tell me about a regular training week or a training schedule for you at this point.
Well, it's evolved over the years. Once I committed to doing RAM, that changed quite a bit. But initially, it would, you know, it'd be 5 days a week of nothing but cycling, and, you know, roughly 20 hours a week. So it was a part-time job. And then the preparation for Race Across America was a bit more intense, with some longer rides thrown in there, some more races that were specifically planned just to prepare for Race Across America.
Is there an ultra cycling community that you're a part of?
Yeah, there is. It's a bit like a big family. And that's one of the fun things about doing Race Across America is it is really just a rolling family. And thanks to the online community, it's pretty easy to get connected with people and stay connected with people and maintain friendships with people that are, you know, even in other countries.
Now, there are a lot of people who do weekend races, that kind of thing, who build up their endurance and start participating in this kind of thing. Obviously, you got very serious about becoming an ultra cyclist. How did your family react to this shift?
They have been quite supportive. I think once I started winning stuff, it became a little easier to justify the time that it took to train for this. Because in a way, you know, I really haven't ever been anything special as an athlete, and so this was quite an opportunity that I found myself in to excel at a sport somewhat later in life. And so they've been quite supportive of the time that I've had to devote to this, and you know, have enjoyed it. You know, to see their mom win, I think, has been fun for my kids.
Was it difficult for you to decide to invest this much time, energy, and money in something that was just for you? I think that's a lot, something that a lot of women who are, you know, in their 30s, in their 40s, struggle with.
It was. It definitely was something I gave a lot of thought to. And I think if not for the support of my family and friends, that would have been a really difficult decision to make. You know, I did have that support, and I think continuing to to do events like Race Across America would be harder for me to justify at this point, I think, than doing it the first time.
Well, let's talk about Race Across America, because it is this storied cycling event, as I mentioned, over 3,000 miles coast to coast, and you rode, I mean, pretty much nonstop. When did you first learn about the Race Across America?
Oh, I think probably 5 years ago. You know, it was one of those things I stumbled across on Google and thought, wow, there's no way in hell I'm ever going to do that. what I was really looking at the time when I started looking at these events were shorter events like the Silver State 508, which was my first 500-mile event. And from there, I had planned to go on and do Race Across the West, which is the first 930 miles of Race Across America. And I honestly had thought that I would stop with that. I really didn't see myself doing Race Across America until I finished Race Across the West, and I began to see how it would be possible to race an event that long.
What did you see that made you think it would be possible?
Just the process of working with the crew, figuring out what I would need to do to sleep and eat and maintain that level of exertion for 3,000 miles. Sometimes you don't really see how to make that happen until you actually begin to experience it. So that's why racing as a preparation was quite valuable for me.
What made it attractive? I mean, you accomplished this Race Across the West, which is incredible. But what made going, you know, more than three times as far something that started to eat at you, make you want to do it?
You know, that's a funny question because everybody asks me, why do you do this? And probably the best question I've ever been asked was by a friend, and she's like, why do you torture yourself so? Because when you talk about this race and how painful it gets, that's a pretty valid question. But what made it attractive for me was, I think as a 45-year-old athlete, that quest to, you know, carve a few minutes off a time trial or a few seconds off my swim, I mean, that ultimately gets frustrating. And so for me to continue to have goals and progress as an athlete, it became more about pushing myself and seeing where my limits are and what I can do. You know, how do you finish something that hard? How do you keep yourself going? And so I really did not know if I would be able to finish Race Across America, and I really felt like I wanted to see if I could do it.
When did you commit to doing it, at least in your own mind?
Somewhere in the middle of Race Across the West. I took some time afterwards to think about it and, you know, and of course review the financial situation and make sure that the money was actually, you know, going to happen for that. And then I think I entered pretty soon after registration opened.
So how long ago was that? When does registration open?
Usually it opens in July or August after the race.
Okay, so you basically have a year to plan and train.
Yep, and find crew, and yeah, it's a big process.
Absolutely, and I mean the planning part, I can imagine, is almost as intense as the training.
It is. It's quite a logistical operation because, you know, you have, well, I had 10 crew, so there's 10 people. You have to figure out how you're going to get them to the event, where you're going to lodge them. And then during the event, where are they going to stay as you move through the country? So there's a lot of logistical things and pieces to put together and, you know, and how many vehicles are you going to bring and how are you going to get them? So it's quite a bit of work.
Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking to ultra cyclist Sarah Cooper. She lives in Urbandale. She recently turned in a remarkable performance in the Race Across America. She rode her bike over 3,000 miles, 3,070.28 miles in 11 days, 18 hours and 56 minutes. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, I'm talking with two incredible athletes from Iowa. Coming up a little later, Kitty Westenauer. She is better known as Miss Kitty. She is 69 years old, still competing in the BMX Bike World Championships. I'll talk with her, but with me right now, ultra cyclist Sarah Cooper. You may have heard a few things about her in the recent weeks and months. She completed the Race Across America in 11 days, 18 hours, and 56 minutes. That's more than 3,000 miles on a bicycle. A really incredible performance. And Sarah, just before the break, we were talking about the logistics of getting ready for that. You had 10 crew members supporting you on that ride. As you do all of that planning and get ready, once you actually start riding, do you have to stop thinking about the logistics? Do you have to try to let that go somehow?
Yeah, that aspect of it is pretty much controlled by the crew once I get on the bike. My job is just to ride the bike and do that job without worrying about what they do. So, you know, I had a crew chief on the day shift and one on the night shift, and they just managed my time, essentially.
What's the longest ride you did in preparation for the Race Across America, other than the Race Across the West the year before?
Gosh, I'd have to say we did a 400-mile training ride. It was 450 or 460 miles. I'm not sure exactly. In May with my crew. And then some of my races were actually longer than that. So, I didn't do a whole lot of long rides or long preparation for this. It's just it's taxing on your body physically to do that quite often. So
difficult to recuperate from? I mean, it would, the recovery would take you so long that it would get in the way of further training?
Yes, pretty much.
When you made a plan for Race Across America beyond logistics, obviously you had a time in mind, you had a goal in mind. How do you break down a ride that long?
For me, mostly it was about studying the race, studying people who've done the race, what kinds of things can go wrong on the race, and having a plan to address those. And as things began to go wrong with my own race, fortunately I had thought about most of the things that can happen and at least had some action plans in place to deal with them as they came up.
With a race that long, I think that for any rider, inevitably things start to go wrong. Am I right about that?
Yes. Some races for me have gone relatively well, but I would say the majority of my races I've had problems or something come up along the way. It's nearly impossible to get through even a day of racing without something going wrong. So you really have to think about how you're going to manage that and have some type of plan for dealing with it.
Now, a lot of us can't even imagine what it would be like to spend that much time on a bicycle. Even people who've done RagBri only get a tiny taste of what that would be like. That's a pretty leisurely ride. So when you're doing a race like this, when you get on the bike, how do you manage your physical needs? What do you eat?
I take a liquid nutrition. It's called CarboPro. It's basically a sugar, and then you mix it with electrolytes. And you know, I vary the concentration depending on the temperature and my caloric needs. And so it's quite simple. For something like RAM that's a little bit longer, that was really the only race that I've added a substantial amount of solid food to, just because the intensity for that, it gets so low later in the race. But for most of my races, it's liquid nutrition.
And is that for speed of consuming it or speed of digestion?
A lot of it is digestion. You know, when you're riding at a higher intensity, it's hard to digest solid food. And so having something liquid that you can put in and your stomach tolerates is really the best way to go, or at least it is for me. I also have a food allergy, so, you know, people handing me stuff at the side of the road is a little nerve-wracking.
Oh, wow. And how do you manage your hydration as well? Because, I mean, although you normally lose water at a fairly predictable rate, there can be really hot days, there can be a lot of wind. How do you manage that?
Well, my crew hands me pretty much everything I need. So, you know, if the temperature is 105 and it's really hot, I get more. And if it's cold, then I get less. And they just super concentrate my nutrition so I don't have to take in as much fluid to get in the calories. So it's just a matter of balancing it out based on the weather.
All right. So someone else is doing that thinking.
Yeah, unless it's a self-supported race, and then I manage that on my own.
How often do you stop?
For RAM, as little as possible, and that's one of the most difficult aspects of that race, is that it's with the time constraints, you just really have to be relentless out there and not stop for much. So, you know, sleep, my long sleeps were 90 minutes. So, and then I would have two very short naps of maybe 20 minutes, and that was it for the whole day. And then everything else, you just have to kind of rush through it. You have to go to the bathroom, if you have to eat, everything just has to happen in a hurry. You can't slack off and take your time with stuff.
So sleep deprivation is so difficult to deal with. Could you feel the mental changes that come along with that as you were riding?
Sure. Yeah, it gets frustrating. The ability to communicate clearly was pretty limited for me at times. I was very with it for the whole race. There were very few periods of time that I was confused, but there were a couple. And it gets frustrating.
Now, give me an example of a time that you remember feeling confused.
Most of that occurred at the extremes of temperature. Like, for instance, there's one section in Arizona we call the Arizona Century, and it's a really tough section to ride, even on a good day. But it was 100 degrees when I arrived there, and then by the end of that century, which was overnight, it was 30. So when I rolled into Flagstaff, I was just goofy. I thought I was on a training ride.
So you really didn't know where you were?
Not quite, no. I mean, I knew I was with my crew, but I thought we were on a training ride. And the same thing happened later that day. We were rolling into Tuba City, and again, it had gotten very, very hot rolling through that portion, and I was quite sleep deprived, and I thought we were out on a training ride preparing for RAM. And then somewhere on the way to the next town, I realized, oh no, this is RAM. So just goofy stuff like that.
As you're riding, what is going through your mind? What do you do? That's a lot of time, a lot of tedium.
Yeah, well, it initially the first couple of days are all about racing. It's all about, you know, nutrition, navigation, what's ahead on the route, what do I need to physically be ready for, that kind of thing. And then as the race went along and I began to have physical problems in Colorado, I started having trouble with my neck, and I developed a condition called Schirmer's neck. And so that was quite painful. And from that point on in the race, it became a matter of introducing humor and distraction into this race so I could not focus on the pain and just focus on getting myself to that finish line.
Well, first, describe what happened with your neck. What is that condition?
Schirmer's neck is basically when your neck starts to give out and you can no longer hold your head up. It was something I had spent some time researching before I did the race, because I knew that I had several risk factors for that. If you've had whiplash before, if you've had a concussion or head injury, people that have had trauma to their upper body and neck are at risk for that, and I knew that I was at risk for it, so I spent some time thinking about it. But I was still quite horrified to find it setting in Colorado, because, that's not even halfway in
right.
The race. And so it was quite painful. There's two kinds. One is where your neck literally just flops on your chest, and the other is rigid. And fortunately, I had the rigid kind, so I was still able to hold my head up for the entire race, and we were able to manage it with soft tissue work and just toughen it out, really.
So soft tissue work, if you're stopping to sleep for only 90 minutes or 20 minutes at a time, when do you work on an injury?
One of my crew members was a massage therapist, and I specifically had hoped to have someone with massage therapy background on my crew, and so I was lucky to have that, and she had essentially 10 minutes to work on that before I slept as I prepared. So, they'd get me off the bike. She had 10 minutes to work on it, because it's not ever going to get any better during the race. It's just a matter of managing it. And honestly, over a month later, it's still not better. So.
Oh, wow.
She had her 10 minutes, and then she was able to show all the other members of the crew, okay, here's the spots, press here, do this. And so literally everyone on the crew worked on my neck at some point if I was stopped for this or that. I remember one time we were stopped for a train, and it was one of those, poor sight distances. You couldn't tell how long the train was. So one of my crew started working on my neck, and I literally fell asleep standing up on his shoulder.
So it was the rigid variety, but you still, had a really difficult time holding your head up. How did you deal with that on the bicycle?
Once I could feel it setting in, I was no longer able to ride in the aerodynamic position on the bars on the front of the bike. And so I asked my crew to get raised aero bars. They had to make a special trip to the bike shop and get my bike modified so that I could continue to ride it. And I had to sit bolt upright from Kansas to Annapolis, so like 1,600 miles.
Wow.
I looked like Mary Poppins riding a 3-speed bike. So we just embraced what the race had turned into and made fun of it and joked about it.
So you were sitting bolt upright. Did you have a neck brace?
No, my family showed up on the course, and I was just horrified at the idea of them seeing me wear a neck brace, or really even the idea of them seeing me in so much pain. And so my goal was to get to the finish line without wearing a neck brace, and somehow I managed to make it. I think all of the soft tissue work that my crew did and just good fortune made that happen for me. It was incredibly painful.
When you think about that decision not to wear a neck brace now, and we talked about the mental state that you kind of get in with the sleep deprivation and the incredible physical effort, do you feel like that was the right choice?
I think so. It certainly wasn't going to make my neck recover at all. It wasn't going to get better enough to the point that I was going to be able to ride on aero bars. It was pretty bad, so it was, you know, a matter of toughing it out at that point. But yeah, I mean, I thought about that some after the race, and I don't know. I mean, when you have a neck brace on, you cannot turn your head. You cannot react to things in the same way. And the last 2 days of RAM, my bike handling skills were so bad as it was. I also worried that that neck brace was going to impair my ability to handle the bike. So
now, obviously, this had to slow you down a lot.
Oh, significantly. Yeah. No. Plus, we had a headwind for the first 1,000 miles of the race, which is why I really think that's what stressed my upper body in such a way that brought this problem on so soon. So once I sat upright in Kansas, yeah, my speed dropped dramatically. I went from fourth place overall to ninth, and then by the finish line, I eventually ended up in 10th. So, yeah, I drifted quite a ways back in the field.
How did you cope with that when other cyclists were passing you?
You know, I don't know. It happens. I knew that I was in a tough situation, and I was determined to finish the race. So getting passed by people, you know, wasn't terribly traumatic because they were men. So I still managed to win the women's race. So I just hung on to that fact. And I knew that Leah Goldstein, a woman, had finished and won the race with that same condition. So I just clung to that idea that I could still win and I was going to finish this thing.
And now, as you're pedaling across the United States, I mean, obviously you're going through all kinds of different environments. You're not necessarily seeing a whole lot of people. This is not a great spectator sport. But you did have people stand out and wait for you even in the middle of the night. What was that like?
That was incredible. I really had not anticipated that so many people would take the time to follow me online and then actually show up on the course. So that was a great experience and just amazing. There was a family from Urbandale that came out on the course by St. Louis and gave my crew money for food and a whole bag of glow sticks. And it was just a really incredible experience because at the time, I was in quite a bit of pain, and it just was quite an emotional moment for me. So I asked the dad why he and his daughter were out there in the middle of the night, and he said, well, I wanted to show my daughter what a strong woman looked like. And it was just the coolest thing ever.
So, wow.
A lot of stuff like that. A lot of friends came out. My coach came down. Of course, my family showed up. And, yeah, it was quite amazing.
You didn't finish the race like you wanted to finish the race. And, you know, all the rest of us are in awe of what you accomplished. You did win the race. You were the first woman, but you didn't do what you hoped to do. Was that hard for you to deal with?
Initially, I would have to say no. I still do not feel any disappointment with regards to that. You know, I would have liked to have been faster. I certainly can be faster. Most people that have seen me ride know that I'm not a slow rider. So when you race bikes, you just take the bad with the good and then you move on. It's not really something I have dwelled on to any significant extent. It's like, yeah, you know, that sucked. But the whole experience was quite incredible. And the race itself is just such a cool race to do. And it was such a cool opportunity for me to be able to do that race that I have a hard time feeling bad about any of it at this point.
Good. That's really good to hear. How are you feeling now? How have you recovered?
It's been bumpy. The sleep deprivation took about a week to get over. The consequence of sitting upright like that, my hands went numb because I was put so much weight on my hands. So I have pretty severe carpal tunnel right now, and trying to get back on the bike and ride has been difficult with numb hands. I actually crashed my bike and bruised myself all up last weekend trying to do that. So, you know, physically I feel fine. My fitness is still really good, so it's a bit frustrating not to be able to ride the bike I want the way I want. But, you know, time will help that.
Are you going to do this again?
No, I'm pretty much moving on from RAM. It was such an investment of time and money that I really just don't see doing that again. I'm so thankful for the incredible experience that it was, but some other challenges have gotten my interest, and I'll probably move on to other things.
All right. Well, we can't wait to hear about those. But Sarah Cooper, you're an incredible inspiration, and thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Sarah Cooper, she's an ultra cyclist. She won the women's division of the Race Across America this summer, riding more than 3,000 miles in 11 days, 18 hours, and 56 minutes. She's been back for about a month and already looking ahead to new challenges. Coming up in just a moment, another remarkable Iowa athlete, Kitty Westenauer, will be here. She's 69 years old and still competing in the BMX Bike World Championships. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.